him power again. Consider his explicit intent to set free violent extremists who assaulted those law enforcement officers at the Capitol. His explicit intent to jail journalists, political opponents, and anyone he sees as the enemy. His explicit intent to deploy our active duty military against our own citizens. Consider the power he will have, especially after the United States Supreme Court just ruled that he would be immune from criminal prosecution. Just imagine Donald Trump with no guardrails, and how he would use the immense powers of the presidency of the United States.
So I watched this so you didn't have to. And I feel like saying I need hazard pay, because I watched all of that last night. And no, I didn't stay for Beyonce. I heard you people out there. I wasn't waiting. I didn't get baited and switched and thinking that there was a Beyonce out there that was going to be performing. We're going to so talk about that. Welcome, guys, fam. Happy Friday to you. It's your girl, Dana Lash, here at the top of this first hour. And we're going to dive all into the last day of the DNC, because it was something else. Did you watch any of it, Kane?
No, I didn't. I did.
You know, value your life, don't
I
you?
I do. But, it's nice on X where they'll take little excerpts and things, and I get to see the bulk of what happens without having to watch it live.
Yeah, I watched it live. I watched it live. Sorry to hear that. Yeah, I know. I mean, it was really a bummer for me, you know, having to do that.
Anyway, no alcohol in the studio today?
No, but I did have a glass of a wine last night with it because,
I don't blame you.
I felt like, you know, no jury would convict me for that. I did watch it, so welcome. Dana Lash with you. You can watch us on X, channel 347, the first, and DirecTV, and Rumble, where the discussion takes place. I don't know if they watched it in the Rumble discussion, so I can't promise good manners in there today, because they may have watched it too, and everybody may be crabby today. Or maybe they just pulled a cane, and they didn't. They just looked at, looked at what was happening on social media. All right, so first and foremost here with this, the big speech from Kamala Harris that was supposed to be her big speech. This was supposed to be the speech that this was her big moment, right? And I really felt like it was a complete waste of time. It was flat, but not as flat as one of those Dixie Chicks. Wasn't as flat as that chick was. We'll get into all of that. But it was a really bad... I thought it was a bad speech because she spent more time complaining about Trump than she did about getting into any of the nitty-gritty, any of the details of the policy. She kind of touched on a couple of things, but it was more of, this is what I'm going to do, as opposed to, you know, here's some specificity. And that's what even, you know, WAPO is saying, that she has to have a little bit of specificity here, because she can't just, you know, say a couple of things like, people need to know what options they have on the table, right? When you're going to make a purchase, you want to know what you're purchasing. And so she didn't highlight her record of losing 320,000 kids brought over the border illegally. She didn't highlight her record of promoting the bail fund for violent offenders like murderers and rapists. She didn't highlight her record as the AG of California when she was going after truant kids and their parents even more so than she was on child predators. I mean, you know, she didn't touch on any of that stuff. And I also thought it was interesting, too. And we got a lot of audio that we're going to get into. There was a lot of audio. I thought it was interesting, too. She goes out and she had that Beyonce song Forward playing when she went out, or Freedom when she went out. And she was trying to sound authoritative, but she sounds weak when she talks. She's not, which surprises me for someone who is a prosecutor. Every woman that I have ever met who has been a prosecutor is tough as all get out. They don't care what you think of them. They're going to go. They're not in there to make friends. They're in there to do a job. And she just seemed like a, I mean, am I wrong in that? Am I reading too much into it? She lacked the command of respect. She lacks whatever it quality there is with women who are in these more powerful roles, I thought anyway. And I sure as hell didn't see any joy last night, as Kane said. There was no joy at all whatsoever. And it was just a flat convention where everybody railed on Trump. They complained, even though these are the people that were literally, that have been in charge for the past 4 years. I don't get what they were complaining about, but they were complaining. They've been in charge for the past 4 years and they were complaining. So I don't know. It was a very non, it was just not a good, it was a bad speech for her, I thought. A very bad speech for her. So again, the platform that she laid out, you guys have heard it all before and we've talked about it all this week. And it was just, this is, let's play audio sound by three, because three was kind of the closest thing. I have a couple of sound bites. There wasn't really a big, there's not some big getcha moment from her speech. She kept it real milquetoast and not, there were no specifics. This was as close as she got. Listen to this. This is audio sound by three. She's talking about the economy.
That's why we will create what I call an opportunity economy. An opportunity economy where everyone has the chance to compete and a chance to succeed.
What does that even mean?
Whether you live in a rural area, small town, or big city. And as president, I will bring together labor and workers and small business owners and entrepreneurs and American companies to create jobs, to grow our economy, and to lower the cost of everyday needs like health care and housing.
That's not what the government is supposed to be doing. I mean, the reason that we're in this position in the first place is because the government got involved in all of it. That's the reason why we are here. The government doesn't create anything but problems. That's it. That's the entirety of the issue. The government is the problem. Getting out of the way is what helps people, helps Americans. Creating an opportunity economy is not a responsibility of the government. It is something that the people do. And I always cringe when I hear people talk about using the government this way, because it's not, that's not the way that it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be like that. The government is supposed to get out of the way and the people create their own their opportunities and take advantage of opportunities. And that's just basic econ 101. She also said this. This was, now, they have to have some kind of boogeyman to run against. And they kept talking about January 6th over and over again. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone ratchet up the incendiary rhetoric about January 6th to this level. I want you to listen to this. Audio soundbite four.
Consider not only the chaos and calamity when he was in office, but also the gravity of what has happened since he lost the last election. Donald Trump tried to throw away your votes. When he failed, he sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol, where they assaulted law enforcement officers. When politicians in his own party begged him to call off the mob and send help, he did the opposite. He fanned the flames.
Okay, this is such a lie. And I've said this to somebody who was very critical of any kind of destruction or anything from J6. We were on air live when it happened. We carried it live and we were carrying Trump's remarks live. What she just said there was an outright lie, an irresponsible lie. There was nobody armed that went to the Capitol. And by the way, this was further confirmed after not only a congressional inquiry into the issue, but the FBI also confirmed this. Yes, the highly politicized FBI, because you know, had someone been armed, that would have been the talking point. They had to make up stories about cops getting killed. The only person who was killed was one of the people who attended, an unarmed woman who attended, and she was shot by a member of the Capitol Police who had no idea of rule number one of using your gun. Know your target and what's behind it. And he just shot at her, even though she had a full SWAT team behind her, and it was a crowded hallway. I mean, it was one of the, and they gave this dude an award. Just horrific. But no one was armed there. That is an outright shameful lie. There was enough, and you could argue there were enough people who wanted to be problem children who attended and or who went to the Capitol as the rally was happening to start problems, that you don't need to make anything up. I mean, we talked about it as it happened. I mean, we paid our tax dollars. That's our Capitol. That's our house. That's, we don't want to see damage. But there were about five times more people who are at the rally blocks away, who are at the Ellipsis, who are at the, who are at the rally where Trump was, blocks away from the Capitol building, who didn't go, or who, as they were going back to their cars or one of the areas where shuttles pick you up, which happens to, one of those areas happens to be near the Capitol. I've been there many times. I've spoken there. I've been at protests there. The idea of painting that whole thing based on a small percentage, I think, is unfair. But again, no one was armed there. He didn't send. She acts like he personally sent, and she doesn't act like that. She said it, that he personally sent an armed mob to the Capitol, and that never happened. And in fact, when he was there, he even told people to leave peacefully. And then after he left and news got around of people going to the Capitol, because when people were leaving the rally, the Capitol's several blocks away, but you have to walk a pretty far away if you, depending on where you park. And when they passed and they saw people there, some people thought, oh, well, maybe there's a rally or something here. You have to understand there were people on either side of the Capitol building, and it's not like you can just see all the way around it, approaching it from one side. And I know this for a fact because I had a friend there who was doing collecting B-roll for a wire service, and his wife alerted him to the fact that this stuff was happening, and he was literally just getting footage of families getting food at food trucks. And then he was like, oh, I got to get over here to the Capitol and get this footage. And he said people were going around either side of it. And there were a lot of people who were coming from the rally who had no clue what was happening. And they thought, oh, well, maybe this is something that's happening here. Anyway, my whole point in this is that she's lying and trying to, with this incendiary remark, trying to pour gas on this fire. She's trying to make it worse by suggesting, by claiming that Trump sent an armed mob to the Capitol. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. That literally never happened. And shame on her for doing that, because there was a woman who lost her life. Shame on her for making this stuff up. We have a lot more to get into, including she talked about elder abuse, the irony of ironies. And we're going to get some of the other, we got some other sound bites from speakers at the DNC. Also, the latest with Secret Service. A number of agents have been placed on leave. We have the latest on that we will touch on as we move. Hey dudes, listen up. I have a gift idea that could truly impress the lady in your life and transform your home into a much needed sanctuary, all with the luxurious comfort of Cozy Earth. It's called Cozy Earth. She'll be impressed. And Cozy Earth uses only the finest fabrics and textiles, making their products super soft and comfortable. So, for example, you could give the gift of comfort and support with Cozy Earth's durable weave bedsheet fabric that keeps your bedsheet smooth and luxurious for years. And you can say goodbye to pilling also. With a 10-year guarantee, these sheets are super comfortable. It's a long-lasting investment. And ladies, you don't have to wait for somebody to get this for you. You can create your own comfort and sanctuary with Cozy Earth's best-selling bamboo sheet set made from 100% premium viscose. It's very luxurious. So we just got our sheets. That's their California king size. And they had our color, which was Harbor Mist. That's the one I picked out. So I love the selection. I love how easy it is to navigate their website and find what you want. So if you want to make every bedroom a sanctuary, do it with Cozy Earth. Breathable, ultra soft, and even softer with every wash. Try them risk-free today for 100 nights and love them or get a full refund. And that's one of the best money-back guarantees in the business. So your bed's calling. And answer with the ultimate in comfort and get up to 40% off only at CozyEarth.com/Dana using code Dana. And don't forget, tell them I sent you in the post-purchase survey and you can get some free socks. That's CozyEarth.com/Dana and use code Dana to get up to 40% off.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh, it only took me through 5,000 pop-ups to get to the stupid story about a train collision in Boulder, Colorado. Some cars were derailed and apparently the conductor was injured. It took place north of Boulder Community Hospital. Some of the roads in the area are going to be closed for an extended period. Although this happened yesterday, all the roads this morning were open. So this is an old story that grifters on Twitter are putting out as brand new. So there we go. Anyway, well, that's it. So the conductor was injured. The roads are reopened. This is one of the reasons why I hate social media, because let's get to the other headlines. Google agrees to America's first newsroom funding deal, and it's already unpopular. Of course it is. This is sort of like the public newsroom that happened as a result of some of those George Soros agencies where they went through this. It's like a Tides Foundation thing, and they were funding all of these different newsrooms across the country, and a lot of it went back to Soros cash. So Google's now agreeing to kind of do the same thing. It's a California agreement, includes also funding for AI, which a lot of journalists are worried could replace their jobs. But considering how crappy they do, I don't think it's going to be any different to have robot overlords write the stories as opposed to robotic communist overlords writing all of the stories. So I really don't care. You guys should have thought about this before you decided to sell out your souls and decide to be political hacks. I really don't care. Learn to flip and code. I don't care. I mean, I think nobody would disagree with that, correct? That's pretty much yes. Also, this flexibility. Oh my gosh, really? Guys, guess what? If you're flexible, you might live longer. Really? Hey, you know what? If you breathe air, you might live longer too.
These studies are so great.
I can't believe somebody spent money on this. In Missouri, the Supreme Court blocked an agreement that would have halted an execution for a man, Marcellus Williams. He now has to proceed with a hearing on his innocence claim with a little over a month to go before the execution. The ruling came late on Wednesday of this week. The St. Louis County Circuit judge approved a plan allowing him to enter a no-contest plea to first-degree murder in the 1998 death of Lysha Gale. She was a Post-Dispatch reporter. She was brutally, brutally murdered in her own apartment, stabbed 43 times, and her purse and husband's laptop were stolen. So that's an ongoing case. We have more to come. We're at the bottom of this first hour. Stick with us. Kel-Tec, the P15, lightest, thinnest 9mm on the market, double stack mag, ships with two of them. You got a 15 round and a 12 round capacity. The 15 you're not losing any of that stopping power. You're not losing any capacity either. It has a minimal pinky extension on that. And then the 12 round is flush fit, double stack mag, holds 12. These are standard capacity magazines. There's a metal version and a polymer version. I have both. Love the metal version because it has the wood panel, that walnut panel, textured grips, true classic look and feel. Polymer version's also great. Super lightweight, lifetime warranty, compact and ideal for concealed carry self-defense. And it's from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. So you have to check it out. Quality made right here in the US of A by a company that shares your values. All American story. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Learn more about the P15 at KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
Keep your finger on the pulse with the Dana Show podcast, delivering timely news with insightful analysis whenever you want, straight to you on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Family who loved us, believed in us, and told us we could be anything and do anything. They instilled in us the values they personified: community, faith, and the importance of treating others as you would want to be treated, with kindness, respect,
and compassion. My mother was a brilliant, 5-foot-tall, brown woman with an accent.
Oh gosh, nobody cares about identity politics. Like, just don't even care. I'd rather fling myself off my roof into a meat grinder than to hear another damn story about identity politics. Nobody cares. How much money am I going to get socked? How much money are you going to steal of mine with taxes, right? How much more are you going to make housing expensive? A free, quote unquote, free $25,000 to people. I'm so tired of this stuff. Welcome back. That was last night. Kamala Harris, who's apparently nobody can say her name right. Even on the Democrat side, nobody can say her name correctly. It was just like, for instance, Audio Soundbite 18. Al Sharpton couldn't say it right either.
Kamala Harris.
Oh, boy. Kamala. Well, didn't he also call Sigourney Weaver Sigourney Weaver?
Yes.
So I don't know if you guys ever saw the SNL skit where it was always somebody pretending to be Sean Connery playing Jeopardy. And he would ask, yes, I'll take the anal bum covers for $500. And the guy playing, it was usually Will Ferrell playing Alex Trebek, was like, you mean an album cover? That's what that is. Or he'll take, I'll have the rapists for $400, Alex. And Will Ferrell, as Alex Trebek, has to go, that's therapists, Sean. That's therapists. That is who Al Sharpton is in real life. We always mock the way that Corinne Jean-Pierre completely messes up words. And Al Sharpton is like the president of the messing up words group of humanity. Sigourney Weaver. I was like, how in the world are you? It's Sigourney Weaver. How are you getting that wrong? He's like, Kamala. And that's what Bill Clinton said too. Kamala. Now, if you were to say that, you would be called a racist pig. Right. But that's Al Sharpton. That's the guy who helped burn down Freddie's Fashion Mart. It's OK. By the way, he was talking about, he'd given some interview. I think I posted about it. There's no audio of it, but he was talking about the because he said he was bringing up members of like the Central Park Five on stage with him. He was joined on stage, the AP said, by members of the Central Park Five, etc., not available to join him were the 7 people killed in Freddie's Fashion Mart after a Sharpton-inspired riot led a guy to burn down the building, killing 7 people, not including the guy who burned down the building, inside. I don't know if you guys knew the story of that. That happened, that was like in the 80s or something when that happened? To say nothing of the Tawana Brawley case, which took place in 1998. No, this was back during Al Sharpton's velour tracksuit days. That's when he wore Juicy Couture tracksuits before Paris Hilton wore Juicy Couture tracksuits. Except his didn't say juicy on the butt, right? He just wore the velour tracksuit and the Bee Gees medallions, right? So anyway, he led the whole thing. And he said, we're not going to have some white interloper. That's what he called the Jewish guy, who, by the way, was a tenant. The whole building was actually owned by a black church. And the black church raised the rent on the building. And the guy who was the tenant subleased it out to a black record store owner. And the tenant happened to be a Jewish dude. And so Al Sharpton was like, wait, what? I heard someone's Jewish? So he got out there and he was like, this white interloper. And all these people got mad, forgetting about the fact that it was a black church that owned the building. And it was a Jewish tenant who subleased it out to a black record store owner. And they were all out there up in arms because they acted like the black record store owner was being turned out by the Jewish landlord. But the man was not the landlord. He was the tenant who was subleasing it. And it was actually the black church who raised the rent that made all this happen. But nobody talked about that. So there were riots and all kinds of stuff, all kinds of anti-Semitic activity, threats, slurs, you name it. I mean, it's like basically New York now, right? So then this guy comes, he's a big fan of Al Sharpton, gets out there and burns down the whole damn building, kills 7 people inside, not including himself. He's dead, but you know. And those people could not be on stage because they're dead. So I just think it's, you know, interesting. That's the guy that you bring up, him. Fun fact. So I have scripture, I don't know if you can see it. I have scripture tattooed on my forearm. I've had it there for a long time. It's Ephesians 6:12-13. And I remember when I was a guest on Bill Maher's show some time ago, Al Sharpton was like the special guest that they bring out to sit on Bill Maher's left side when the panel's on Bill Maher's right side. And I was sitting there, I was part of the panel. I think I was there with John Legend. I was on with John Legend and I can't remember who else. And Al Sharpton came up and he was the special guest. And he asked, he had asked me what he, I guess he saw it on my forearm. And I said, well, can you tell me what this is, Reverend? And he looked at it and he couldn't tell me what the scripture was, you know, because he's a big reverend and all. And I said something like, well, I'm a reverend too now. You can call me Reverend Lash. And I think Bill knew I was trying to pick a fight. And so the conversation moved. But it was very interesting. He's just, that's who he is. He's just an absolute fraud. He's a total, complete fraud. He loses some weight and acts like he's vegan. And everyone's like, oh, he's innocent now. Like, that's all it takes. Oh, he was a murderer? Well, he lost some weight and now he's vegan. So it's all good, right? I mean, he defended and promoted that Tawana Brawley lady who's falsely accusing dudes of rape, right? And then later he goes, well, I had no reason to think I was being lied to. The way that he tried to turn that around was stunning. So he's up there. He's up there saying, Kamala. It was a weird whole convention, particularly the last day. And I don't know why in the world it was amazing to watch people cheer her the way that they did. And my oldest son was watching it. And it was amazing to watch people cheer Kamala Harris the way that they were, considering she was in last place in 2020. No one liked her. A month ago, everyone was like, the Kamala problem. There was an actual headline at a left-leaning newspaper, the Kamala problem. And she just gave a meh. And then she's out there, well, it's time to go forward. We're going to do this and that. You've been in the White House as vice president, though. That's what gets me about all these people. They're like, we want change from literally the same Democrat policies that the past 4 years. We're the ones in power and we want change. The ultimate irony of that. So she's been, what, 33 days now. She's been the candidate and hasn't given a sit-down interview. Of course, after watching her speech yesterday, her sister was a way better speaker than her. Did you notice that too? Way better speaker. After watching her remarks yesterday, I can see why. She hasn't engaged with any person in the media. It's all just manufactured. And they're going to try to ride that out all the way to November 5th, by the way. All the way out. What was absent yesterday was any mention of the border, really. No mention of the children lost at the border. She, I think, gave one remark about it. Audio soundbite two. This is all she said about the border last night.
After decades in law enforcement, I know the importance of safety and security, especially at our border. Mm-hmm. Last year, Joe and I brought together Democrats and conservative Republicans to write the strongest border bill in decades. The Border Patrol endorsed it.
Oh, boy.
But Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign. So he ordered his allies in Congress to kill the deal.
That's also a lie. And in fact, there were a lot of super conservative Republicans out there for whom the border is a major issue that were upset because they thought Trump wasn't involved enough. The idea that Trump made the call and told people not to pass this is one of the stupidest hot takes I've ever heard. That is completely not even remotely accurate. In no reality did that happen. He hadn't even talked about it. He didn't even say anything about it until the day that I think it was already out of committee and going to the floor. He didn't say anything about it. And remember, when Border Patrol, it was the Border Patrol union that came out about this bill. And it was throwing a pittance at the border. There was nothing for force multipliers. It was all about immigration judges, etc. But the Border Patrol union was looking at this specifically as, does it make the Border Patrol's life easier? Not really. It's like a pittance better than what was already in existence. And because of that one little minutia, it's a little bit better. And I'm not even kidding. There was nothing for the wall. There were no new processing centers that were going to be developed. No more boots on the ground. They were going to send in more immigration judges to like faster process people through. That was pretty much it. And I knew, we talked about it the day it happened, that it was going to be used as a way to try to beat Republicans over the head, Republicans who are allies to the Border Patrol, which, by the way, I get that the union boss is going to only specifically look at pieces of legislation that are great for their union members, but it should also be part of the union boss's purview to factor in what position is going to be most advantageous for the union in the future and not just for like right that second, because you're going to get the short end of the stick if you're going to settle for a pittance now when you could have gotten a hell of a lot more later with someone, a party that was more aligned to your values and had more respect for your work. I thought that that was a bad move, and I thought a better union boss probably would have made a better one. It is what it is. And so they bring that. And by the way, remember, the union members were livid over that. They were livid that the boss decided to go out and do this because they weren't against it. They were all out there saying, this is not going to do a damn thing to improve a single bit of this. Nothing. So that's the closest to the border that she came. That was it. That was it. I mean, I don't even know what the hell she keeps talking about with the way forward. She's the one driving the car. She's already there. I mean, she's driving the car. If you look at the surveys, the majority of the country does not like the direction of the nation, whether it's at Quinnipiac or Rasmussen, whatever it is. They don't like the direction of the nation. And I am trying to figure out, do they not want to go forward with themselves? I mean, what they touched on, you're looking at price controls, Soviet-style price controls, housing subsidies, taxpayer funded, that's going to just jack up prices for housing. It's going to price the middle class family out. Inflation, 21% plus. I mean, she keeps talking about the middle class, but yet she's not doing anything to alleviate the crunch that is felt by the middle class due to the policies of the administration that she's currently part of. I mean, the Trump tax cuts are going to expire. And this was my biggest criticism about that, was that they were set to expire. They're expiring next year. Those, they were passed in 2017. So everything's going to get even worse. And then to say nothing of capital gains or the unrealized gains, I mean, what you're going to do is destroy investment. You're going to destroy any incentive that people have to invest in emerging business, in tech, in R&D. I mean, this is just a disaster. And all she talked about was fluff. And she talked about, she would say things like, here's a generic statement that everyone's heard before that my mother said, but I'm going to make it sound like no one's ever heard it before. How many times did she do that during her speech last night? Good heavens. It's just a mess. But it wasn't as bad as audio sound by 26, Kane. When the chicks, Chicksy Dicks, went out and they decided to perform the national anthem.
They dropped the Dixie.
Oh, that's right. They're just the broads. Listen to this.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleam.
And here she's going to kick it.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming. And the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof.
So, you know, it's not a bad arrangement, but I just don't think that you should be doing arrangements like that if you don't know how to stay on key. And you could say, well, you know, her ear monitor, but good singers have muscle memory and good singers know where they are without even having to hear themselves. Good singers, and I know a lot of them, they know where they are without having to hear themselves like that. And the other two broads seemed like they were on key. If you were watching, it was the one on the right. You could tell because she was just could not find that pitch, couldn't get it. But I also think, why can't you just sing the anthem? I mean, it doesn't make any, just sing the anthem. I don't understand these people that get out there and then they want to do like multi-syllable, or they want to do like big giant vocal runs on a single syllable word. And all that does is just prolong the audible torture for us and the embarrassment for them. Why? Just sing the anthem, you know, just sing it. Good heavens. We have more on the way. And then later on, Carol Roth is going to join us to talk about all the fun economic stuff. Because you guys know I carry all the time everywhere. There are instances where I cannot, and I don't have the luxury all the time of saying, I don't want to go there because it's a gun-free zone. Sometimes by nature of work, I have to. And so, you know, we were just talking about, you know, Texas State Fair trying to make it gun-free. Whenever the state tries to disarm you, you got to think of ways to get around it. And this is kind of one of the reasons why Byrna Gun came to be. It's spelled B-Y-R-N-A. It is a non-firearm firearm that doesn't care about your gun-free zone signs. It does not care. There's no background checks. There's no waiting period. None of that. It is another option for you for self-defense when you're barred from carrying. And this is how I view it. This is how I have friends who have gotten Byrna guns for this exact same reason. In fact, the one that everybody's getting is the Byrna SD model. That's their best-selling self-defense option. And you can choose your color, your model, all of that. Now, what this is it shoots chemical irritant projectiles that can disable threats from up to 50 feet away. But unlike stun guns, where you only have like one or two shots, you got five rounds with the Byrna SD. And so it's great for, you know, restricted access areas. It's those areas where you need to be able to defend yourself, but you're kind of being prohibited from doing so. It's one of the reasons exactly why it was created. The non-firearm firearm that doesn't care about the gun-free zone areas. You have to check it out because, like I said, there's different models. I mean, maybe the SD isn't the one for you. Maybe there's another one that you would prefer. You need to go and check it out. They also have different colors. They also have different projectiles, accessories. You can learn more about it at Byrna.com/Dana and get 10% off your order. That's Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off.
Not able to catch the full Dana Show? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth podcast and get news and laughs delivered in short, easy-to-digest episodes. Ideal for your busy lifestyle on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
We're very discreet, reptilian, cold-blooded.
That's Nancy Pelosi. Who's she describing?
Herself.
Wait,
Democrats.
What?
Democrats.
That seems not awesome.
Not the first time she's done it.
Just going to say, that doesn't seem great, you know? I don't know. That's Nancy Pelosi, everybody. I mean, that kind of confirms what a lot of us, I think, have said, you know, anyway. So I don't know. I was telling Kane that there was, I'm pulling this story up, so forgive me right now. There is apparently a lot of people on the left who are upset. A lot of people who are at the DNC because everybody got baited into staying there for a long time by the rumor of a Beyonce appearance. And I was thinking, you know, what if it never was supposed to be Beyonce? Like, here's our special guest, the devil. It's the devil, everybody. Here's the devil. And then the devil comes out on stage and is like, it's me, Satan. And like gives a speech about how he is all for, you know, all the taxation and the, you know, abortion on demand funded by the taxpayer up to the moment of birth. And is like, hey, did you get your free abortion outside? And then, you know, just to, you know, be performative about it, the devil then just decides to perform an abortion there on the stage at the DNC. I mean, that seems more, it's a special guest at the DNC. It's the devil. It's Satan be devil, everybody. That's comes on out and is the special guest at the DNC. That would make sense, you know. I would be like, oh, way more sense than like a Taylor Swift or a Beyonce. Yeah, I mean, that tracks, right, for sure. We got a lot coming up. We got all the latest on Lotso Huggins. Oh, sorry, Tim Walz. I mean, that's really who he is. We got all the latest on the Secret Service, the DNC, what's to come. Stick with us. It's our friends over at ReadyWise. They want to make sure that you are prepared at all times. They want you to be ready so that if something goes sideways, politically or, you know, natural disaster, you're going to be able to feed your family and you're not going to be worried about where your nutrition is coming from. And the cool thing with ReadyWise is from start to finish, you know the chain of command for all of your food. It's all high quality U.S. ingredients packed in a state-of-the-art U.S. plant, and everything is, you know, freeze-dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare, just add water, 25-year shelf life. It's going to be there when you need it. They have two offers for you. You can use promo code DANA20 at checkout to get 20% off of any regularly priced item. And then you can also do the buy one, get one for the 72-hour food kit that they have. That's a $100 value for just $50, and it includes two boxes, 12 pouches of premium survival food with over 11,000 total calories in each kit. And just visit ReadyWise.com. Use promo code DANA20 at checkout, and you'll get 20% off any regularly priced item. And don't forget about the buy one, get one 72-hour food kit either. That's ReadyWise.com, promo code DANA20 for 20% off.
Talking about how terrible everything is. Well, my mother had another lesson she used to teach.
Oh?
Never let anyone tell you who you are. You show them who you
what the hell? Okay, what does this even mean? First off, I love the whole, my mother used to tell me, insert random, completely derivative and common saying. And that's what my mom told me. What? What does that have to do with, she goes, people talking about how terrible everything is. Well, my mother said, what does it have to do with what your mom said? Things suck right now because you helped make it so. What does it have to do with your mom? Are you telling us that you're showing us who you are? What? What? Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. We're at the top of the second hour. I'm just trying to understand what this chick was talking about. I'm sorry. I know it's just the very beginning again, because I'm trying to figure out how she segued from everybody's talking about how bad things are to my mom told me. This is just like two non sequiturs. Go ahead.
Talking about how terrible everything is.
Yeah.
Well, my mother had another lesson she used to teach. Never let anyone tell you who you are. You show them who you are.
Okay, so people are talking about how bad everything is. And so show them who you are. People are talking about how bad everything is. And you know, my mom really liked the double stuffed Oreos. Not the singular stuffed Oreos, but the double stuffed. Because they were tastier. I just don't understand what that means. Anybody? Anybody got a...
I wish I did.
I don't...
I'm looking.
What? I don't understand that segue. It was just weird.
She showed us who she is.
Yeah.
This last 3.5 years.
Can I play this delicious bit of irony for you? Audio soundbite 9, please.
For seniors facing elder abuse...
Somewhere Joe's going, what, me? Do you know he left? He was at home. He tweeted out, he tweeted out a photo of him and Jill standing in this Restoration Hardware type set. And he is holding the remote looking confused. And the convention is on the TV. And they wanted you to believe that they were watching it. You know they weren't. They were watching the convention is what they wanted you to believe. Mm-hmm. And you guys know that that's not... Yeah. That's not how that went. It was a very weird evening. And everybody's mad over because Beyonce wasn't there. I think that they bait and switched just so that they could keep people in the seats because nobody wanted to stay there. Nobody wanted to stay. Her whole thing, her whole speech was, I hate Trump, lie, straw man, false equivocation, and then blah, 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 blah. That's all it was. It was just I don't know. I was not impressed. I don't know if voters are going to be impressed. When you consider the time that she's been out there trying to define who she is. I mean, when Barack Obama first started campaigning, he started like 19 months early. Now, granted, he got in the race because he got his opponent kicked off the ticket. This is back when he was running for Senate in Illinois. That's how that started. And you know how that happened? Like flashback real quick. He went after the guy who was married to Jerry Ryan, a 7 of 9 from Star Trek. And her husband were going through this very acrimonious divorce and some stuff was coming out. Not that he had been unfaithful, but that, you know, he was a little, I don't know how to describe it, unusual. And that all came out. And so 7 of 9 was instrumental in making Barack Obama happen. Of course, the Borg would, right? So anyway... He started his campaign like the moment he got that Senate seat, the moment he got the nomination. And then he was running for like 19 months. Trump started like 13 months early. Even McCain was like 16 months early. So today's 33 days. 33 days. I don't know. Her record. Can we talk about her record for a moment? Because she and other surrogates are trying to define her as the tough prosecutor going up against Trump, right? The felon. That's what they want to make it sound. Oh, he's the felon. When she was in San Francisco, when she was the DA of San Francisco, there are a couple of places. Mercury News has how she had more than 1,900 convictions just for marijuana offenses. And her office had a policy, even though they had a policy against pursuing jail time, that she still did. And this was one of the things that many of her opponents attacked her on back in 2020. In fact, her prosecutorial record is one of the things that kept her down under 1% in the primary. It's one of the reasons why Democrats opposed her, because she represented every bad element of the state. And it's just wild that, you know, here this is the first presidential election, you know, with after all these riots and everything else, and, you know, with all of this stuff still going on. And now she went from being under 1% to now people love her, even though no one got to vote for her. That's the other thing, too. They were all out there cheering for someone they didn't even get to vote for. She when she was AG, she was attorney general from 2011 to 2017. She entered the Senate in 2017, and she targeted ideological opponents. We talked about this when she went after the Center for Medical Progress and David DeLayden, who was the citizen journalist. And they were the ones who came out with all those videos showing that Planned Parenthood was selling, actually selling. This is not hyperbole. There's video of it. I spoke to David DeLayden. I interviewed him. There was video that he debuted on the program. It was actual. They were actually piecing out body parts from infants for profit, and they were making a lot of money on them. And the videos were from like 2013 to 2014. Planned Parenthood staff admitted on camera to doing it directly. And she went after David DeLayden. She raided his house. She seized all of his footage, all of his equipment. They prepared a case against him. And there were even attorneys who were like, well, that's kind of abusive in terms of the criminal process. Xavier Becerra, who's now head of Health and Human Services, which is weird. He came after her as AG in California. They ended up filing like 15 or so felony charges against DeLayden back in the year that she went to Senate, 2017. And Planned Parenthood was suing. They sued him, even though the Supreme Court, I mean, it was weird. I mean, they went after him because he was a citizen journalist, and he disrupted a narrative and really put a black eye on Planned Parenthood. But she is absolutely one of those politicians that would target law-abiding Americans, just innocent Americans. You talk about being distrustful of the state, but yet she's one of the reasons why people have a distrust of the state, because of the way she handles law and order. I mean, she went after nonprofit groups. Daily Signal has a big thing on all of the nonprofit groups that she went after. She went at using the IRS even. Her office demanded that all these different groups turn over their IRS Schedule B forms. They wanted their donors. The groups would not do it because they were trying to protect their donors. They were saying there's a reason why we have donor anonymity, and they wanted the names of those people that were donating. And so they pursued them quite heavily. And she the way that she wielded her authority when she was a prosecutor and then even in the Senate was pretty unbelievable. And then she's border czar, which that was the other thing. At the DNC last night, you had speakers that went up there and touted her record on the border, saying, oh, well, she's, you know, she fought the cartels. That's the line that they keep saying. But I thought that she wasn't the border czar. I mean, she actually said this. We have her saying this, too. This is audio soundbite 7. Listen, she even says this. I thought this was not her job, though. Listen.
I fought against the cartels who traffic in guns and drugs and human beings, who threaten the security of our border and the safety of our community.
Yeah, I don't know what she's talking about there. You know, she was in the Senate when a lot of the Fast and Furious stuff was, a lot of the justice for that was coming to light. You guys remember the Fast and Furious under Obama Biden? They were running guns and forcing federal firearms retailers, FFLs, to sell guns to known cartel members so that they could, quote unquote, track them. Except, as an inspector general report later concluded, they just didn't track them. And all these guns ended up killing tons of Mexican nationals, ended up killing U.S. Border Patrol agents, all like Brian Terry and others. And then when El Chapo was taken into custody, they found a bunch of these Fast and Furious guns, including a 50 cal in his possession. And people would say, oh, well, George Bush had one called Operation Wide Receiver. The difference between Operation Wide Receiver, and I remember this starkly, and the difference between Operation Fast and Furious is that Bush when he realized the stupidity of Operation Wide Receiver and how idiotic it was, at least ended it. Whereas Operation Fast and Furious, they just let it go until it became a black eye for the DOJ. And then Eric Holder put a stop to it only after pressure from even other Democrats, because they're like, this has gotten way out of hand. So she, I mean, it was in Senate part as part of that. And then with Biden and Harris, the restorative justice that they have promoted has only helped to explode crime. And by restorative justice, we've talked about this before, you know, where you give a wrist slap to these repeat offenders, and instead of having harsh deterrence, you actually encourage them by the absence of deterrence. And then you watch the recidivism rates, you know, spike. And that's what's been happening. I mean, under her, good grief, what did they say, like 17 times something increase in crime? Something, it was something crazy. I have this stat on this somewhere. But she was a bad AG. She would go after truancy in California more so than she went after like child predators. It's stunning. So she's got a really bizarre record. And I can't take someone seriously as a prosecutor when they make no distinction between legal immigration and illegal immigration. I mean, she's been absolutely unwilling to enforce existing law at the border. That's like Biden. Biden didn't create anything new with his executive order on immigration. He just started enforcing the law that Trump had been enforcing. And he had suspended enforcement of that law previously when he first got into office. All he did was go back to kind of a norm. It wasn't anything new. And she's wanting to undo even that. So it's. I don't know. She's not a law and order candidate, but she thinks that this conviction with Trump, which will be appealed at some point, but she thinks this conviction gives her that credibility, the credibility her own record doesn't, by nature of them being able to say, oh, he's a felon. So Joe Biden would be too, but remember the IG said that he was too. Counsel said that he was not there mentally to stand trial. So they just kind of glossed over it. Her record's bad, though. She didn't have a great record. We got a lot of other stuff on the way. Let me tell you what we got coming up. Carol Roth is going to be joining us here to talk about the latest with the economy, because it's bad. We're also going to get into some of this culture stuff. Good Trump, bad Trump. I think we might have a reconciliation as it relates to Georgia in the works. That is very good news indeed. We're going to get into all of that and more as we move. Hillsdale College. Hillsdale is a great institution. It's like one of the remaining, I guess, educational institutions that's out there. And a lot of people, you know, it's like going back to school. A lot of people are going back, I think, this week. You know, I have my oldest that goes back to school this week. And it's really awesome that they make so many resources available for you. If you're not going back to school, you can still take advantage of all the resources that Hillsdale has that are for free to you. And you can do that at dana4hillsdale.com. So they have all of these educational podcasts on their website, right? They do deep dives into history. They have their lectures. They have, deep dives into some of the most fascinating aspects of our Republic's founding. And you can access all of that on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at dana4hillsdale.com. And this is just one of the many ways that they're defending liberty on the battlefield of education. You also get special content from Hillsdale's president, Larry Arn, up there as well. But I mean, they've got everything, like the Classical Education podcast. They have their history, Radio Free Hillsdale, all of that. And it's just a great way to stay up to date and also know everything about the founding of our republic. It's a small Christian classical liberal arts college in Southern Michigan, founded in 1844 to do just this: to preserve liberty through education. Choose your new favorite educational podcast today on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at dana4hillsdale.com. That's F-O-R, dana4hillsdale.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, this is actually really crazy. Neuralink's second patient is already playing Counter-Strike 2. He's using the brain-computer interface to shoot people in a video game and design improvements to a setup in Fusion 360. He's shooting baddies, guys. It's the baddies. Doing really well. He's already doing the interface. He's already using the brain-computer interface chip to play Counter-Strike 2. He's doing computer chips in the brains of people, Musk's company, that have spinal cord injuries. And this is the second one. He can browse the web, build stuff in CAD, play video games all with the device. That's actually really fascinating. And there's video of him doing it too. Video of him playing it. That's crazy. Also, nobody can figure out why the Atlantic Ocean is cooling at a record speed. I was told that the oceans are getting hot and that you shouldn't buy oceanfront property unless you're Barack Obama buying property in the Hamptons or in Hawaii. I want equity with that. But they said, oh, it's the change to the cooling rate. It's a 15-month it's weather, guys. El Nino's fading. La Nina is set to kick off. Colder waters are going to be driven up by stronger winds. It's weather. A hacker who faked his death to avoid child support was sentenced to prison. Jesse Kipf. He kicked the bucket in January 23, but then they discovered he was alive and well in Kentucky because he hacked into and manipulated a government database to avoid paying a six-figure child support debt. Oh, boy. He stole credentials of a doctor from another state to get access to Hawaii's death registry. He created and certified his own death certificate, according to prosecutors. Then he got a new identity and stolen private information to international buyers, including individuals from Algeria, Russia, and Ukraine. 39 years old, he was sentenced to 6 years and 9 months in prison. He's got to pay six figures in child support and damages he inflicted to the government and corporate computer systems. He thought that was going to be easier than just paying. Now he's got to pay more than even what he owed for child support. Wow. Not everybody's bright. The sticker price at some colleges, nearly $100,000 a year. CNBC, which is very late to the game, says it's a worrisome trend. CNBC also didn't write a whole hell of a lot about consolidating all of the federal control of the student loan scheme to said federal government, something that all Democrats, including Elizabeth Warren, who bitches about it the most, voted for. So, yeah, sky-high sticker prices. Get scholarships. And not everybody should go to college. And there's apparently an ancient ocean of magma found on the moon's south pole. Look at that. Carol Roth joins us next. Because you guys know I carry all the time everywhere. There are instances where I cannot. And I don't have the luxury all the time of saying, I don't want to go there because it's a gun-free zone. Sometimes by nature of work, I have to. We were just talking about, Texas State Fair trying to make it gun-free. Whenever the state tries to disarm you, you got to think of ways to get around it. And this is kind of one of the reasons why Byrna Gun came to be. It's spelled BYRNA. It is a non-firearm firearm that doesn't care about your gun-free zone signs. It does not care. There's no background checks. There's no waiting period. None of that. It is another option for you for self-defense when you're barred from carrying. And this is how I view it. This is how I have friends who have gotten Byrna Guns for this exact same reason. In fact, the one that everybody's getting is the Byrna SD model. That's their best-selling self-defense option. And you can choose your color, your model, all of that. Now, what this is it shoots chemical irritant projectiles that can disable threats from up to 50 feet away. But unlike stun guns, where you only have like one or two shots, you got five rounds with the Byrna SD. And so it's great for, restricted access areas. It's those areas where you need to be able to defend yourself, but you're kind of being prohibited from doing so. It's one of the reasons exactly why it was created. The non-firearm firearm that doesn't care about the gun-free zone areas. You have to check it out because, like I said, there's different models. I mean, maybe the SD isn't the one for you. Maybe there's another one that you would prefer. You need to go and check it out. They also have different colors. They also have different projectiles, accessories. You can learn more about it at Byrna.com/Dana and get 10% off your order. That's BYRNA.com/Dana for 10% off.
On the go and need a quick news fix with a fun twist? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast for bite-sized informative episodes perfect for your busy schedule on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
Your example on craft.
You finished first. That already have price gouging.
Can
laws
I tell you why
place?
That those are fallacious and misleading at best? And the craft, your so, craft look, analogy is even. Why can't it, I tell you? Please let me tell you. Craft, you say, was 440% profit increase. The example you used, the prior quarter from the year before, They had a charge of $1.3 billion, an accounting change which wiped out profits. Then they earned what they normally let me finish now. They earned.
You didn't let me finish. Look at the data. Come on. We have economic study now after economic study.
This is the way it always goes.
When there is more concentration,
40 million eggs were destroyed because of avian flu.
When there is more concentration in an industry, we have seen much greater increases in.
Do you attribute the inflation? That's what you think we need to do to solve it?
They're not random. They are not random one-offs. It is part of the problem when you've got companies that are gouging consumers on prices. Consumers need to know they've got somebody on their side.
Senator, listen, we're trying to help. We're trying to actually do.
Where are you in the 36, 37 states that currently have price gouging
laws? Just quickly on that point, Senator Warren.
Can you
just tell here? This is CNBC where, by the way, listening to her try to explain economics is like listening to me try to tell you about football. Except I probably know, it's scary to say, more about football than she does about the economy. That's on CNBC, you know, that big conservative network. That's what the C stands for, right? The conservative NBC. And she was struggling to even talk there. Oh, I got to get my friend Carol Roth's reaction. The lovely Carol Roth. I love how she describes herself as a recovering investment banker. She's got the best hair on TV. She is an entrepreneur. You guys know her. New York Times bestselling author of You Will Own Nothing. And your war with the financial world order bestseller. And she knows all about money. She knows all about way more than Elizabeth Warren does. First off, Carol, always so good to see you. How frustrating was it to watch that? Because there were like four different cuts of either of these anchors just trying to get an answer out of her. And she just keeps going back to the stuff that Harris and Biden have always said, price gouging and big grocery and all this other stuff. I didn't learn a single thing from that lady.
You know why I hate Elizabeth Warren so much? And there are many, many reasons to choose from, Dana. So I will narrow it down for you. Because I actually don't think she's stupid. I think she's one of the people who actually are smart. So I think it is even more offensive when she layers on this total and utter BS that she knows is not the case. There is no price gouging or gauging, as Kamala Harris likes to call it. There are some really clear things that we could see if there was anything that was sort of an outsized price shift for companies. They're going after grocery stores. The net profit margin for grocery stores across the industry last year was 1.6%.
And
that was right. The lowest amount. So it's an industry that has low margins. It was the lowest amount since 2019. We also saw the PPI versus the CPI. And to get a little wonky on you here, the PPI is wholesale inflation. It's the inflation and the cost of goods and services. Then we have the CPI, which is what consumers pay. So if there was either gouging, you know, on the production side or on the grocery side, we would probably see those diverge, and they've tracked very, very closely. So there is absolutely no price gouging going on. But Kamala Harris and apparently all of her little followers need to say this to distance herself from the policies that she created that caused inflation, because, you know, the arsonists burn your house down and now they want to help you rebuild.
That's it entirely. I mean, they act like. I would just think if the big grocery could price gouge or gauge, which I don't understand how she, that they would have always done this, number one. But number two, it would seem like it's really hard for a grocery store to price gouge, because then you could just go to a different grocery store. I mean, where I live, I love the suburbs. They get knocked so hard, but God bless the suburbs. I got four grocery stores here, just like within a couple of miles of me. I could go to any one of them just for the cheaper prices. That's kind of hard to do in that market.
Right. This is exactly how a quote unquote free market works, is that if somebody is gouging and raising their prices, that you have other choices to make. And like you said, particularly if you live in the suburbs, you have four. I think I have six around us that we can go to. And so, yeah, you would find that those other stores would say, well, we're going to peel off all those customers by undercutting those gouged prices.
Yeah.
So it's just a ridiculous talking point. There are times when there are shortages, right? You know, shortages of Ubers on New Year's Eve,
right,
or, you know, shortages of gas. When people do raise their prices or companies raise their prices incredibly, even then it makes sense. On New Year's Eve, Dana, if you have surge pricing, it's because the drivers don't want to come out. So it helps get more drivers out there. People who might take individual individual Ubers would then decide to carpool because it's too expensive and let more people have access. So even then, the pricing sorts out the distribution of goods and services in the market. It's just nonsense, but they want to blame everything on corporate greed, which apparently, you know, as they were saying in the clip, just decided to happen now, you know, over the last few years.
Never had it before.
Yeah. Never had it before. It's a new thing.
Brand new concept. Talking with our friend Carol Roth. Brand new thing. Well, it does absolve them from having to explain what policies and decisions they made in their administration that led to this in the first place, because then they got to talk about government spending and the relationship with inflation and how it starts from, you know, the fertilizer that the farmer has to buy and then the cost of labor to harvest what he's got and then the fuel and everything else required to get it to where it needs to go and the processing and all of that then snowballs to making the consumer pay more, but they don't want to have to go back to the beginning. And I mean, are people dumb enough to fall for that though?
So they are. Unfortunately, we have a very, you know, low information, economically illiterate electorate, who, by the way, when they do consume news, it's from the corporate press. True. And the corporate press will say the most ridiculous things. They will take the same policy that's proposed by two different parties and portray them completely differently. So if you're a low information person and they tell you about greedy corporations over and over again, why would you not think that that's a thing? You don't understand economics. You don't understand how any of this works. You know, all you care about is, you know, who Taylor Swift is dating and, you know, what's going on with Beyonce. And you know, that's your world, which is fine until it comes time to vote for these people. And then it's not fine anymore.
Right. Exactly. Well, talking with our friend Carol Roth, her newsletter, by the way, carolroth.com/news, a free newsletter that you can take advantage of and follow what Carol follows. The other point, because she didn't really hit on a lot of her economic platform in last night's speech. It was all just kind of fluff. Prior to that, though, she did come out and talk about going after unrealized gains, which I am absolutely floored. And so here's what I'm trying to figure out. And I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And you know way more about this stuff than I do, which is why you're here to explain all this to us. What happens if you have something that loses value? How does that work in an economy where the government is taxing unrealized gains? Like do they owe you then? How does that work?
I mean, under fair, any sort of semblance of fairness, not that unrealized capital gains is fair or moral in any way, but of course they never propose compensating you for the losses. They only want to take you for the gains because this is all theoretical to begin with, not to mention just the snowball impacts of, you know, even if it were just to be for the richest people, which we know based on $80 billion for the IRS to go after quote unquote billionaires and, you know, $600 Venmo, you know, reports to go after billionaires. We know that that's not their target. It's not their buddies and their donors. They want to go after the giant wealth that's held by the middle class, you know, in stock portfolios and 401ks in their homes, by the way, because a lot of people have unrealized capital gains in their homes right now, especially after all of this inflation, because we've seen asset inflation along with cost of living inflation. So that means anytime something theoretically goes up on paper, they get to pick the point in time too. So, you know, we know these things fluctuate and it's not an actual realized gain until you make that transaction. And that's the really scary part. But even if it was just for those, you know, billionaires, the idea that they're going to have to give up a piece of the business that they built and they own in order to fulfill this is insane. It will put downward pressure on stock prices. It will lock up capital in the economy. I mean, there's so many ancillary impacts. And that's the problem when you get to the Democrats and economics is everything is very much in theory and they don't think about the after impacts. Something like the stimulus checks that they gave out during the American Rescue Plan. You know, I came on this show, I came on many shows, and I said, folks, we cannot let this happen because you take $1,200, you're going to be paying $10,000 a year for the rest of your life. And that's exactly what happened because it was obvious. It was a stimulus check. That's what's going to happen. People don't understand that. They see the small benefit that they could get or that they feel makes sense. but they don't go through the chess game of what happens next and what's the next move and what's the next move. And that's where the good, theoretically good intentions, even though I don't think the Democrats have good intentions, come to these really bad outcomes. And then everyone sits around and goes, oopsie, I must have been corporate greed.
Yeah. Talking with our friend Carol Roth, my last question for you, I got to ask you about, where did these jobs go? We had like over 800,000 jobs that just sort of disappeared into the ether. Did they just make this up? This means, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, they've been lying to us about job numbers then from the get-go.
Are you a South Park fan, Dana?
I was partially raised by South Park. Yeah, I'm a major South Park fan. So
they took our jobs.
Oh, yeah.
They took our jobs.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, we've had just absolute trash data under the Biden administration. And there are a number of reasons, in terms of them changing the way they do calculations, their statistical modeling, and we've had a fall off of respondents. There are individuals and companies who just don't want to answer anymore. They just don't want to tell the government what's going on. So we have seen, there's always revisions to data, but the level of revisions, the number of revisions is what stands out here. This last revision, yearly revision, that we lost 818,000 jobs that, apparently didn't exist, the second largest on record. The last time that happened was during the Great Recession financial crisis, where you could kind of understand where it was hard for them to get a pulse on what was going on. Plus the fact that we have people, I think it's over 5%, 5.3% of the population that they recorded who has multiple jobs just to be able to keep things afloat. And then we have a big sort of disconnect between part-time jobs and full-time jobs. So their only quote-unquote achievement, which also, by the way, includes claiming that they created jobs that were really people just going back to work after COVID, this entire crowning achievement of theirs that nobody really cared about because people are working multiple jobs is basically a flat-out lie.
Gosh. We have so much fun to look forward to in November as a nation Amazing. Holds its breath. Are we going to go off the economic cliff or not? Wait and see. Yay. I'm so excited.
It will be filled with joy. You will have food shortages.
That's right. I forgot.
You will have a housing crisis. The stock market, the economy will crash, but it will be joyful.
Joyful, if not, a ragey kind of joy, but joyful all the same. Carol Roth, you can find her on X. You can find her at carolroth.com/news. That's our newsletter. Always so good to see you, my friend. Go and get her bestseller, You Will Own Nothing, a scary book that must be read. Carol, all the best. Good to see you, my friend.
Best to you too, Dana. Thank you.
We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this second hour.
What's the proper Christian understanding of kindness? Pastor Alan Jackson explains.
We have been coaxed into believing this thing that the 11th commandment is thou shalt be kind. And there are times God is anything but kind. And there are times his people have to be something other than kind. Otherwise, we are going to lose our freedom and liberties.
Subscribe to Culture and Christianity, an Alan Jackson podcast, on your favorite podcast app.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Genius. A Florida man speeding from deputies in a stolen car gets trapped in a tennis court fence. 24-year-old man was arrested, accused of stealing a vehicle and then leaving the scene of a hit and run. He did not stop for law enforcement. And then he crashed his vehicle right into a fence. Dominic Garcia is facing charges of battery on a person 65 years or older. It's Manatee County Sheriff's Office. And they said that it was about 6 a.m. on Wednesday. He stole this black Ford Expedition, fled the scene of a hit and run crash, and then inadvertently turned into a tennis court, and then the fencing got him. He was going 80 miles per hour in a 15 mile per hour zone. And they said the way he was caught in the net was crazy. They said they've never seen anything like that before. So he's arrested. He's arrested. You can never flee like that. I don't know what people are thinking. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is Miami Herald. A Florida man tries to hide a bag of drugs in his mouth. Bags of drugs in his mouth and dies, according to Florida deputies. Miami Herald. He fell ill and died after deputies said that he tried hiding multiple bags of drugs in his mouth. Cornell McKinney, 54, was unresponsive. He and four others were being held outside a suspected drug house in DeLand, according to Volusia County Sheriff's Office. Authorities were there to execute a search warrant as part of a drug investigation. And then during the search, he wouldn't respond to their questions. And they thought, okay, he's trying to swallow or hide something. And they asked him to open his mouth. He refused. And then when he declined to spit out what was in his mouth, he fell unconscious. And they tried to life-saving measures. They began these life-saving measures. And they got three plastic baggies out of his mouth. And they contained heroin, fentanyl, and crack cocaine. That is insane. So they're conducting an autopsy, but it's probably not. I mean, he literally put three baggies of heroin, fentanyl, and crack cocaine in his mouth. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, that's sad, but oh my gosh, it's crazy. Let's see this. I got a couple of others here. No. Oh, this is, let's do this one. So, Pollo Tropical, an employee, got into a fight with his coworker, and ended up stabbing his coworker. They got into an argument, and it started by they were punching each other. Then they started choking each other, and then the suspect, Alex Nelson, 32, of Margate, grabbed a chef's knife and literally stabbed the guy in the back. So this was like an employee fight that got totally out of hand, and then he fled the scene. Witnesses provided statements to police. They overheard the verbal argument. They watched it escalate. And then apparently the surveillance footage at the Pollo Tropical corroborated all the accounts, and they were able to take him into custody. He is in Broward County Main Jail, where he's being held without bond. I mean, leave the area if it's getting so hot that you feel like stabbing your coworker with a chef's knife at Pollo Tropical. Maybe leave the area. I don't know. Just an idea. Let's see this. Drunk Florida man on a lawnmower rode it right into a cop car. Yeah, Haines City police officer, 68-year-old Gary Anderson, was on a riding lawnmower and literally ran right into the cruiser. Didn't damage it, and he was drunk. He was taken in with a DUI. Just ran right in. How do you ride a lawnmower right into a cop car? Third hour next. Stick with us.
Well, as he can attest, I was a blubbering mess all night. As a parent, you're right, I couldn't stop thinking about the fact that the first president that our daughter is going to come to know is a woman who looks like her. And I couldn't get over that.
Oh my gosh, just gag. So that's, is it Chest and Booty Juice? Yeah. Chest and Booty Juice. So that's Pete Booty Juice's partner at the DNC last night, saying that he's just crying because first president, their daughter will know is a woman who looks like her. What is your damage? Just no, that's not something normal people do. It's just cry over politics. I mean, who does that? Well, the left, obviously. But that's just, who does that? That's so weird. Welcome back to the program. That's weird. Top of the third hour, Dana Lash with you. And you can find us channel 347 on DirecTV X and Rumble, where the discussion happens as well. That kind of sums up, I think, why it was so easy for people to just accept a switched out candidate. They don't care. It's just all about the cult of whatever personality. They don't care. They don't care that their votes were just completely trashed. They didn't care really back in 2016 when it was Hillary over Bernie either. So, I mean, it's just kind of par for the course. Meanwhile, got a few other things. Secret Service. Multiple Secret Service agents were put on leave after the attempted assassination on former President Trump. I think it's, why is this coming this many weeks later? That's the shocking thing to me. And it was the head of the Pittsburgh field office. They said the head of that office is one of at least five agents who were put on leave after this 20-year-old tried to kill the former president. There's been all kinds of investigations and inquiries from the House. But according to, I think it was NBC that first broke it, four Pittsburgh field agents, including the head of the division and one of Trump's personal security team, too, was also put on leave. And from what I've understood, that has to do with apparently one of his guys did not get him off stage fast enough. And that was the thing that we talked about as well, how long he was allowed to remain on stage, because at that point, I don't think that anybody had any idea if there was only one person shooting or if there were two at that point. And so they said that the Secret Service spokesperson did not comment on the reports, but they said that they are still, quote, examining the processes, procedures, and factors that led to this operational failure. So these agents put on leave. And like I said, I still think it's really weird to me that it took that long, because typically whenever you have these sort of instances where if it's a police involved shooting, something like that, I mean, those officers are put on leave like immediately. And that really wasn't the case here. It was a little weird to me, but there's still a lot of questions to be, you know, to be answered. And I guess that, you know, they're going to continue with this, but it really was, I think it showcases an absolute breakdown from the top down. Now, I think that there are some really good agents that work for Secret Service, but the problem that you're witnessing isn't an issue that's caused necessarily by these, you know, the rank and file. It's the decision making all the way at the top that's supposed to keep this department humming in great working order and not allow for any kind of gaps in security like what we saw. I was listening to, he was a retired Secret Service guy, and saying that it was crazy, which I agree with, and it's one of the first things I said when I saw the full video. How insane was it that they allowed him to stay on stage that long? And I know it allowed him to get that iconic photo and to say fight, fight. But at the same time, when I was watching that, I wasn't thinking of, oh, that's great, he got this soundbite. I was thinking of, do they know there's only one person shooting? Has that been confirmed? Because if not, why is he still on stage? Why is his head not covered? Why is he not completely covered? If you remember, and we talked about this at the time when it happened, when they shot at Reagan, when Hinckley tried to kill Reagan outside of that Hilton Hotel in D.C., Secret Service did not mess around. They physically picked him up and shoved him in the car. Like, they threw him like a doll in the car. Because at that point, when stuff goes sideways, you can be the president in chief, the commander, the president, you can be the commander in chief all you want to, but you are no longer in charge. When that happens, Secret Service takes over for your security and they will physically pick you up and move you. I think the issue with Trump, though, is he's like 11,000 feet tall. I don't know if people are aware of this. I've known him for over a decade and I've met him in person before, and he is huge. He is huge. His hands are big. His arms are, he's a big guy. And, you know, if you even have like a, you know, a little taller agent, let's say like a 6'1", 6'2", Trump's taller than that. Trump's like 6'6". He's a huge dude. That's really difficult to get a guy like that. And then he kept saying, wait a minute, let me get my shoes. And then he did, you know, made that iconic image. But my thought, honestly, when I was watching that was not, that's great that he got this, that they got that photo and they have that soundbite. My first thought was, why is his head not covered? I mean, my husband will even tell you, I'm watching the video. We had a layover in Nassau and I'm out in the street trying to stream this video. And I'm yelling at it, like, why isn't his head covered? Why isn't his head covered? And I'm sure people thought I was crazy. But that was legit my first thought. And I think that the people who did make that happen are probably some of the ones on leave and then some of the higher, because it's a higher up. This is something that is, it's evident that it's top down, complete dysfunction. And they've got to figure this out. They've got to figure this out. And so, you know, we'll see what else they uncover, but there's still a lot of questions to be answered. Like, why in the world didn't have anybody on that water tower either? They had nobody on that water tower, no one on that roof. You've got the two highest points there in that whole field, in that whole area, and you don't have anybody on those two points. I don't work in Secret Service. I've done all kinds of training and I have had protective details before. And my knowledge of protective details comes from being the principal that's being protected. And I can't tell you how many times, especially at Parkland, I don't know if I've told you guys this, but when we were at Parkland, I had a 4-person detail. And these were all like retired spec ops. And there was a private firm and they were great agents. And it was turning into a powder keg, for instance, in Parkland. And I remember when we went in there, one of the agents told me, when you're the principal and your security is in question, if something goes sideways, you have zero say. Because their sole responsibility and focus is getting you to a position of safety. And I remember being on that stage when all of this was happening after the conclusion. And there was a woman who did try to rush the stage and she was trying to get at me. And I did think, if the cameras are running, that would be $1 million video to take a hit, take a punch like that. And it started getting real kind of crazy. And security didn't waste any time. They had one guy, actually, one of the detail actually grabbed that woman. The other three, one guy was clearing the way because I couldn't even get off the stage at that point. And Jake Tapper even confirmed on Twitter that he actually told me, do you have security? Because you need to get out of here now. And I was kind of going towards the stage, and I didn't even have, or towards, because they had rollaway stairs on the stage, and the crowd was getting so crazy that the stairs were moved. And I don't even remember. It happened so fast. The next thing I knew, security, one agent had one arm, the other agent had the other arm, and they literally lifted me off the stage. I didn't take the first like five steps myself. They just had my arms locked, and I was kind of like, not dragged, but I was like carried away. And then they put me down and I was able to walk. But that was, and they wanted to get out of there like that. That was very, it's very interesting, but there you don't have a choice in that instance. And I remember too, the next morning, I spoke at CPAC, and I was speaking right after Vice President Pence at the time. And then I think President Trump was speaking later. He was speaking the next day. And I get there, and they already have, like, security, you know, because apparently they had bomb-sniffing dogs out there. It was already, and they do not play. Secret Service does not play. If you get too close to an area, they let you know. I mean, if you're the person being protected, if your detail is good, when something goes sideways and people are shooting at you, you don't get to tell them, I got to get this. You don't get to do that. That is not something you do. So I think some of the agents are, there was one, the female agent in the front was great. Not the one that was on the ground, the one on the stage, because she was trying to, God love her. She's not 6'6". She was trying to do everything she could. You could see in the video, she was trying to grow herself, like, you know, go gadget herself over him. Wasn't happening, but it's a top-down thing. This is a top-down rot, and they've got to fix this. I wouldn't feel comfortable with any... I don't feel comfortable with... Unless they change some stuff out, I think everything's going to have to be supplemented with private security. It's just, you know... So they're still investigating this and trying to figure out... There's a lot of questions still. And why did it take so long? I mean, if they're put on leave, why didn't it happen almost immediately? Is it because they didn't, those agents themselves didn't fire? Is it because they didn't return fire and it was just the counter sniper? I got questions. I don't know if you guys saw this column from Thomas Sowell that came out Wall Street Journal today. It's a must read. It is an absolute must read column. And I think I did tweet it out. If I didn't, I'll make sure that I do, or I'll make sure I put it up on my Facebook page, because you guys need to read this piece. But it's over at the Wall Street Journal, and it's Thomas Sowell's piece. And the headline is, Republicans better get on the ball. They haven't made the case against Harris. The clock is ticking. It's a good piece. He says that they lose this year's election, and he talks about against an administration whose policies have been rejected by poll after poll. And as you remember, this is something that we touched on. They have been. I mean, the majority of people think that the country is going the wrong way. The direction of the country is bad. They don't agree with these economic policies. That's another big, you know, part of it. They don't agree with these economic policies. They feel skeptical about their own financial futures. This is a huge issue. So when you have this many people who are questioning, the future of the country, why, you know? But he says, do 330 million Americans deserve to see their lives ruined by another 4 years of Democrats' economic disasters and unchecked violence by both domestic and imported criminals? That's a great point. It's a very good point. Yeah, if you haven't read it, you need to. It's a long piece. I kind of want to read the whole thing, but at the same time, it's a long piece. But he says Republicans have got to get on the ball. They haven't made the case against Harris. And this is something that I've said as well. You cannot let her define herself. You need to define her as, this is Harris running against Harris. They keep saying forward, but for what? Forward for what? You've been driving the car. Like, what? Are they, whenever they go, we need to change, we need to move forward, we need to change, you're the one who's been there. You've been vice president for 4 years. What are you talking about? We got more to come as we roll towards headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Mexico is going to bring charges against a capo, but not for drugs, but for turning over another drug lord to the U.S. Strange saga. Two Mexican drug lords detained after landing a plane in the U.S. in July. They were looking at Joaquin Guzman Lopez, but not because he's a leader of the Sinaloa cartel that his dad, El Chapo, founded. They're bringing charges against the younger one because he kidnapped Ismael Zambada, an older drug boss from a rival faction of the cartel. And so that's the younger Guzman apparently intended to turn himself into U.S. authorities, but he apparently brought Zambada along as a prize to sweeten the deal. I mean, it's not a bad idea, you know? I mean, I'm just saying. So they said that they were going to get Guzman for kidnapping now because he kidnapped a drug lord. Are you going to charge someone for kidnapping a drug lord? This is where I would be. My version of justice would be, oh, you did me a favor. I'll take some time off. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. I don't know. Maybe that's my, just saying. So, and Marble Hill, I used to have some family down there. All officers resigned from the Missouri Police Department in Marble Hill. It's the largest city, and this is southern Missouri in Bollinger County. It's a beautiful town. Marble Hill is gorgeous. But this is kind of crazy. They had all their officers resign, K-O-M-U. They don't have a huge police department, but they said that it goes into effect today. And they're trying to figure out how to address the situation. They said that their captain and all of the other officers all resigned at the same time. And it looks like there's kind of a back and forth between budget constraints and things like that. But yeah, that's all of their officers. It's not a huge department, but still, you know. Greg Abbott just tweeted that, well, we knew this was going to happen. RFK Jr. endorses Trump. I mean, I don't think that's like crazy news. Everybody knew this was coming. Kane's the only person shocked by this.
That is a lie.
Kane is so shocked.
There is nothing but speculation about his endorsement.
As much as he doesn't like old people.
Now that it's not speculation, that's all I'm pointing out. And now somehow.
But we knew.
You didn't know.
Can I talk about the naked man with the chihuahua? Okay, we're doing this one. A naked man with a chihuahua surrendered after a 5-hour standoff with police. L.A., of course it is. 25-year-old, he was living in the back room of a commercial structure, broke into the business, brandished a gun at the owner, barricaded himself in the room. Apparently he was high on meth. And yeah, I hope the dog is okay. Where's the dog? I only care about the dog. The man set a small fire in the room, grabbed his dog, and made his way to the roof. They were trying to talk him down. He was taken to the hospital. Where? Nothing about the dog.
Why?
Is the dog also on meth? I mean, chihuahuas. Kane says chihuahuas are naturally.
There are some that act like they're naturally on meth.
What did you say about chihuahuas?
That there's only 3 different kinds.
And tell the folks what those are.
Well, there's the chill, nice and friendly chihuahua.
That's a rare
then
one.
Then there's the hide under the couch and piss yourself chihuahua. And then there's the a-hole chihuahua that you're describing there that acts like it's on meth.
Yeah. Well, was this one on meth? It doesn't say. It doesn't talk about the behavior of that particular dog. Anyway, good Trump, bad Trump. We got this next. Stick with us.
Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast, because who says you can't make fun of people while staying informed on your own personal time? Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
In anticipation here and elsewhere that there may be a special guest. I am told by Democrats that Kamala Harris was their guest. They did not want a celebrity at the end of this convention to essentially compete with her. One senior advisor telling me this is a deadly serious election. And if you looked at the end of this program, having Leon Panetta come on, the former defense secretary, really presenting Vice President Harris as a plausible commander-in-chief.
Yeah, they weren't going to have a Beyonce. That's what everybody had heard all night. They were baiting people all night, because didn't the campaign say this or something? TMZ ran with it. And apparently the campaign was not dispelling any of these rumors. They're like, oh, yeah, sure. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, is it going to be Beyonce? Oh, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. No, the special guest is the devil, everybody. It's the devil. There's the devil. And the devil gets out there and is like, I support this platform. Yes, the abortion stuff. Yes. Did you go out and get your free abortion? Then the devil comes out and there's no song and dance. He just speaks for a few minutes and then leaves. But I do think You know, they could have, Beyonce could have come out and had performed instead of all the single ladies. It could have been all the single cat ladies. You know, not that they wouldn't do that, but that would have been funny. Like, all the single cat ladies, all the single cat ladies, all the single cat ladies, all the single cat ladies. That would have been funny. Just only in my head, maybe. But so they baited everybody to stay there. In the meantime, Trump was, he wasn't tweeting himself. Like, I think he was putting it on Truth Social, and someone who runs his account on X put it up on X. But he was remarking about stuff on X. And one of the big things that he said, by the way, this was kind of a, this was a big deal, very big deal. I call this good Trump. So I have a good and bad Trump here. So good Trump was this tweet, where he said, it was 16 hours ago, he tweeted, quote, thank you to at Brian Kemp, Georgia. What? Yes, the Georgia governor, Brian Kemp, they've been arguing for years. Thank you to Brian Kemp for all of your help and support in Georgia, where a win is so important to the success of our party and, most importantly, our country. I look forward to working with you, your team, and all of my friends in Georgia to help make America great again. Now, some people said that it was ghostwritten, but the weird capitalization makes me think otherwise. And that's not like, that's just, I'm so sorry. I don't say this to be mean at all. It is a generational thing, okay? It's a boomer thing. My mom does it. She's not watching, please, because I will get lit up. You know what I mean? Like, some words will be just randomly capital, like proper noun treated. I don't get it, but it's a, you know. But then they make fun of us, like, you know, the words that the slang that Gen X had or millennials have or Zoomers have or whatever. Anyway, this is the reconciliation that a lot of people wanted. And it's made Democrats really mad that he tweeted this at the end of the convention, because everyone went, wait, what? He just made up with Georgia, a state that he needs to win. A state that is not a red state necessarily for Trump, but yet Republicans are very popular in it. The governor's a 63% approval rating. All of the Republicans have been doing really, really well. Just nationally, they haven't been. It's very odd. So there's some sort of a disconnect there. Now, him saying that at the end of the convention was hysterical, because then Democrats freaked out. Now, this is how they were trying to spin it, because to me, the fact that he's this is some, maybe some reconciliation with Brian Kemp, that bodes very well for the Republicans. The fact that he did this at the end of the convention and all the media began talking about it. Now, Democrats are mad. Democrats are like, oh, well, Donald Trump must feel threatened because he had to tweet to Brian Kemp last night. That's very, you know, admirable spin. Very admirable spin, but very transparent and pathetic nonetheless. All he had to do was tweet. They had a multiple day convention where they brought out Pink. And they rumor milled Beyonce to keep people in their seats. They had Oprah there. I mean, you had the guy, the penguin from DC Comics, J.B. Pritzker. You had all these guys there. And the fact that he did this, that I think is threatening to them. So that's good Trump. I got to touch on this, and I don't want to talk about it, but I'm going to have to. I want this to just be misspeech. I would like for it to be misspeech. I really don't want to talk about this. So this is 23. So he was talking to, Fox and Friends. And particularly he's talking about crime, and then he's mentioning New York. And this was, it's a 50-second clip. Listen.
You've got to let the police do their jobs, number one. Number two, you have to do a policy of stop and frisk. When you see a guy coming down the street and you can, the police know every one of them. They know their middle name. They know where they live. They know every one of them, the local police, and they're great. You got to let them do their job. Stop and frisk and take their gun away. You've got to do it. Mm. If somebody has, because okay. They have all these guns.
All right, so this is what I'm so the Terry stops or like, you know, some stop and frisk. This was something that Michael Bloomberg had really promoted. This was something that a policy that he had really promoted when he was mayor. And even after it had been taken out of practice, he wanted its reinstatement. And I wrote about it at the time. The the mentioning of and then take the guns, I get a little nervous about that, especially since there was no specificity mentioned in with us. And I wrote back in 2018. I wrote this back in 2019. I've written about it for years. The reason why stop and frisk, especially when Bloomberg would talk about it, is it was he, when Michael Bloomberg talked about it, he, there's a lot of audio about it. He was very inartful. I mean, there's audio of him saying you just throw young black men against the wall and frisk them. I mean, these are things he's literally said on, and over at my main website, I'm at Substack now, but my previous website where I put a lot of things, that's, that audio was over there. But he started talking about this again when Bloomberg was running for president. This was back in 2020 when he was running in the primary for a very short lived run. And I had a whole chapter in my first book, Hands Off My Gun, about all this. And part of the reason why he's a progressive. And so it's not uncommon that he has a very racial perspective of things, particularly as it relates to crime. Because he went out and said, for instance, 95% of murders are all young black men. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he was misrepresenting criminal statistics. And I went through all of that, whether it was just misspeaking on his part or just total ignorance. You know, he liked the Lucy law. That's if you sell loose cigarettes on the street. He wanted a more rigorous enforcement of that. He was very into stop and frisk, and he was very into confiscation, as you know. And that's a problem because, and his, by the way, his policy was also wasn't as effective as he had presented it to be. And I do think it's interesting because when he would go out and say, yeah, we got to stop and frisk minorities, when Bloomberg would say it, all the Democrats cheered and applauded. It was the craziest thing. It was the craziest thing ever. So I don't know. I understand why some people argue for its implementation, but in an environment where you have a government that sold guns to cartels and then tried to use the resulting crime, and Bloomberg cited this during his 2020 presidential run as another reason to disarm law-abiding people in the U.S., that's a problem. When you have the government that's putting pressure on financial institutions to track your purchases to see if you're buying weapons and all of this other stuff, that's an issue with me. I don't like giving the government that kind of oversight. And when it comes to just straight up confiscation, my argument has always been, if someone is dangerous enough to have a natural right removed from them, then they are dangerous enough to go through due process also. And why in the hell are they out on the street? Which is a different argument from just keeping felons, you know, incarcerated. I just think, why are they out, you know, go through the process and then make them prohibited possessors, do all of this. And you know, if you are in New York City and you're fighting the black market and you're fighting, the way to handle this isn't at the end of the problem. It's like the way to handle a flood or from a burst dam isn't at the very end, at the end of all the tributaries. It's up at the dam, right? This is where the problem is, a cracked dam that's resulting in this deluge. This is the problem with New York, and I think the approach here, restorative justice is what is driving all of this. There are no deterrents. There is insanely high recidivism. A lot of these very violent repeat offenders are allowed to just plead down to nothing. Sometimes they're given, you know, very like low cash bail or just, you know, name recognizance, and that, and then they're free to walk. This is one of the things that's driving this. That's what you have to fix in order to remedy this issue. You can't just approach it strictly on the enforcement after the fact approach. And that's always been kind of my criticism of this. And I'm not down with this at all. And I think that saying, you know, well, then you just, you know, someone's like, oh, he's talking about taking away guns from criminals. That's what he's talking about. Well, how do you know whether or not someone's a criminal just by looking at them? I mean, that's kind of a thing. What if the government labels you a criminal? I mean, for crying out loud, the government has called me a sitting domestic terrorist. Like literally elected sitting officials right now in Congress who are Democrats have literally name called me on social media publicly, Google it, a domestic terrorist. What if they decide that they want to, you know, this is my problem. You can't have oversight like this when your government is so far over the line that, you know, people are being targeted for lawful activity. Like, Dexter Taylor sitting in Rikers right now for lawful activity. This is the stuff I'm talking about. So no, I'm against, until restorative justice is eliminated, I don't want to have any other, I don't want to have a conversation about, oh, we'll stop and frisk and then confiscate. Because that, the issue is restorative justice. The issue is these very progressive DAs that allow these repeat offenders to just keep on offending. I'll give you one example of this. In my hometown of St. Louis, we've been in Dallas for about 14 years now, but I lived in downtown St. Louis. And I lived not far from where a young man named Vondrick Myers was shot and killed. And Vondrick Myers was a teenager. He already had a pretty lengthy record. He had led cops on a high-speed chase at one point through downtown. Kane, it was on Grand Avenue, and you know how congested Grand can be. And when he jumped out and tried to flee, he threw a pistol. You know, he was, you know, under, I think he was like 17 or 18 at the time. He was a prohibited possessor because he was under the age where he could actually, you know, purchase and carry a firearm. And so he was in a lot of trouble, and he had to wear an ankle monitor, and he was supposed to be on house arrest. If he would have been in jail, his life would have been saved, but you had a corrupt DA and a corrupt judge that allowed him to just pay basically 1% of his bond, and he was able to just walk out. And so he did. And what happened is one evening he was at a well-known drug house, not far from where I live downtown, and an undercover cop had happened upon him. And apparently Myers recognized that the guy was an undercover cop and fired shots at him. And this guy returned fire, according to all the witnesses, and shot and killed Vondrick Myers. And this was shortly after Mike Brown's death, after Mike Brown chose death by cop. And, you know, the neighborhood erupted into riots and all kinds of stuff. This is an example, though, of what I'm talking about with restorative justice. You could question whether or not Vondrick Myers would still be alive had he actually faced the full scope of penalty, had there actually been a deterrent in place, had he actually been, because he should have been actually held in custody because of the nature of his felonies. He had committed a string of felonies and he wasn't even 19 years old. So that's the big question. This is what's driving this. And it's younger people that are driving this, by the way. So that's what you have to focus on. You can't just start talking about diminishing due process protections. That's just going to make it more dangerous for the innocent. And it does nothing to curb illegal activity always performed on the black market by these repeat offenders. We have a lot more on the way as we roll towards the conclusion of this third hour. Kel-Tec, the P15, lightest, thinnest 9mm on the market, double stack mag, ships with two of them. You got a 15 round and a 12 round capacity. The 15 you're not losing any of that stopping power. You're not losing any capacity either. It has a minimal pinky extension on that. And then the 12 round is flush fit, double stack mag, holds 12. These are standard capacity magazines. There's a metal version and a polymer version. I have both. Love the metal version because it has the wood panel, that walnut panel, textured grips, true classic look and feel. Polymer version's also great. Super lightweight, lifetime warranty, compact and ideal for concealed carry self-defense. And it's from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. So you have to check it out. Quality made right here in the U.S. of A. by a company that shares your values. All American story. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Learn more about the P15 at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
So RFK Jr. is speaking now. He's dropping out of the race and announcing that he's dropping out of the race and endorsing Trump. He's already pulled out of Arizona and he's done all the paperwork necessary for that. He says, because, you know, there's always this huge fight amongst the Kennedys as to who owns the Kennedy legacy, right? And so RFK was saying that his father and his uncle would have been livid as to how the Democrats are operating now and the way that they installed Kamala Harris and all of this. So you know that he's going to probably get pushback from the other Kennedys, because the other Kennedys, when he announced that he was running, all came out and made a big deal of bashing him, which I thought was just trashy. I mean, heaven forbid, there's enough, you know, legacy at the table for all of you, just all them Kennedys to sit. It was just so lame. But so he's out announcing now. And I don't know, we were kind of speculating, who does it hurt more that he's out? And does it make a huge difference if Trump decides, you know, he's going to put him as part of his cabinet or something, does that make a difference? Is that enough to get RFK people then to vote for Trump? I mean, I think it just becomes, well, how badly do you not want to have Kamala? Right. Trying to measure the motivation of these voters is a very interesting thing, and that's something that we're going to be looking at in the coming days. And remember, early voting starts in just a matter of weeks, just a few weeks. Early voting kicks off. So, I don't know. We'll see. There's a lot there. All right. Today in stupidity, Kane.
All right. This whole week with the DNC convention has been a lot of craziness and stupidity. And CBS, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's last name, but I guess his name is Dokapil.
I don't know.
Sounds about right. But anyway, this is him explaining the emotion. And Juan, this is cut 16 of the DNC convention. Let's see if you feel the same way. Listen.
I will leave the reviewing of the content to you, but the emotion and the feeling down here is, I don't know, 7-year-old's birthday party is how I would put it. There is joy and there's not a lot of thinking. It's a good time.
Not a lot of thinking. Mm. Joy and a not a lot of thinking. By the way, the not a lot of thinking part I agree with. The joy part, I didn't see a lot of that. I didn't see a lot of joy this past week.
No, I saw people who are angry, and then they tried to sell you a bunch of platitudes, and then they kept telling you forward for what? And they were mad about the direction the country's going, despite the fact that they've been in charge for the past 4 years. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. But we got a whole other week coming. So I hope you have a great weekend, everyone. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, like and subscribe. Substack, Chapter and Verse as well. Have a great rest of your night, and I'll be back with you Monday.